A happy Monday to you all, and welcome into 49ers Live. I'm Joe Fan, joined by Ted Robinson. Ted, we had the weekend off. You were off in Pullman, calling college football in Spokane as well. That was your weekend away from the NFL a little bit.
Well, the weekend was actually great. Look, we all love it because it happens twice a year. You get a Thursday night game, you get a bye week where you have a Sunday off. And Kyle Shanahan talked about it, how excited he was to have a couple of days where he can zero in on the family. Obviously, it wasn't done with as much fun as the 49ers would have liked because of the frustrating ending. By the way, I want you to know, Color Rush. I wore this shirt today to honor the Color Rush. Thank God that's the last time we're going to have to see those uniforms again.
But you made it through.
But, well, listen, the officials couldn't even see the numbers, right? How many missed calls? The officials were very poor to begin with, but how many times did they misidentify the numbers? And they're standing 10 feet away. They can't read them either. So, but the weekend was a lot of fun, and hey, look, unfortunately, Joe, look, you're a young guy, and you're still in the prime of your life and everything.
Prime of my life.
You know, I'm from a generation where we were raised in this business that there was a strict line. You know, when you were on the air and you were talking about sports, you just talked about sports. You didn't go, and sports and politics never blended. Well, we've seen that line kind of get blurred a little bit in the last year. Over the weekend, it was obliterated. Yep. And that's what yesterday was about.
Yeah, obviously, Ted, referring to President Trump's tweets and comments over the weekend, calling players who protested during the national anthem SOBs, and then later tweeting that anyone who partakes in such protests should be fired. Here are Jed York's comments, as he was one of several NFL owners to respond to the president. Quote, "The callous and offensive comments made by the president are contradictory to what this great country stands for. Our players have exercised their rights as United States citizens in order to spark conversation and action to address social injustice. We will continue to support them in their peaceful pursuit of positive change in our country and around the world. The San Francisco 49ers will continue to work toward bringing communities and those who serve them closer together," end quote. Ted, I'll give you the ball first. And I know, I think if all of us had our druthers, those two areas would be separate, right?
Sure.
We want our sports to be our disengagement from reality and our pure enjoyment of entertainment, mm-hmm. because that's what sports ultimately are, something that brings us together. But in that same vein, using this to bring us together in a different sense now has become a necessity given what the president said over the weekend. And I'll give you the floor first, just your initial thoughts from the president's comments, Jed's comments, as well as what transpired yesterday in the NFL.
Okay, so we'll try to make this quick here. But just to follow on what you said, I think that's vital, Joe, because I've heard this from a lot of friends and neighbors of mine who live here that are 49ers season ticket holders. I heard that thought a lot last year, was that the response they had about this entire umbrella scenario was that they went to football games to get away from this, from the world. And when it gets introduced to them on the field on Sundays, they were turned off by it. And it wasn't whether they agreed or disagreed. It was just the fact of it being an escape. Okay. Jed has been someone to really just to praise and honor for the way he has stood on this from last year forward, right? From September 1st of last year through as we speak today. So just over a year where he has been solidly behind what Colin Kaepernick started, what teammates of his joined with last year, and what continues to grow from the NFL side. So I think that's a very worthy position and stance. On the weekend, I would say three quick things. First of all, how much people forget. And we lived this last year up close. Everyone around the 49ers did, so we know. But last year, we were playing a preseason game in San Diego, and I walked down the hotel, and I see a conversation taking place at a table, and it's Colin Kaepernick, Eric Reed, and someone else. I didn't know who that person was. And it was the day of the game in San Diego, and I find out that person was a Green Beret, Nate Boyer, right? And so my point is the product of that conversation was that Colin Kaepernick, who had chosen to sit during the national anthem, in his conversation with Nate Boyer, who expressed to him how many military people felt about that stance, the actual sitting, to be technical, the result was that night what happened for the first time. Colin Kaepernick took a knee with Eric Reed and Eli Harrell did it, and then teammates stood around them all year. The point being that that's what Nate Boyer expressed to Colin Kaepernick, that from a military standpoint, that was a way to express your stance in a more respectful manner. So now you have, in essence, a 300-pound blowhard that is challenging what a man who served in one of the most elite, prestigious military units in our country, the Green Berets. expressed to Colin Kaepernick last year. The lack of thought on that is startling. A second point, what happened over this weekend to me demonstrated in 2 days. We've seen more unity now, at least publicly, unity between NFL owners and players than we've seen probably in the last 4 or 5 years combined. I hope that continues. I hope that this starts where NFL owners and players can find common ground. And I think the NBA is serving as the brilliant example of how that can happen. I hope it happens in the NFL. And third point, I thought about this flying home yesterday from Spokane, and then I heard actually Mike Tirico say the same thing on Meet the Press yesterday afternoon. I think nothing has happened to help ensure that Colin Kaepernick will get an NFL offer sometime this year more than what happened this weekend. He's being completely recognized again as the beginner of what has become an essential conversation in our country. And I think now what's just happened over the last 2 days, I fully believe that he'll get an opportunity. Now, whether he takes it is a different question. He'll get an opportunity sometime this year.
It's well said. I have some thoughts as well, and I took notes to make sure I don't get too long-winded. Mm-hmm. The thing about this is it's such a nuanced situation, and the opinions are so strong on both sides. And I think as Americans, we struggle. We are losing our ability to navigate that nuance. We owe it to ourselves to listen to people with other opinions. We owe it to bring those thoughts to the table and have that that discourse where, you can disagree with the method of the protest and still give the message the time of day to really understand why these guys are doing what they are doing, right? I mean, mm-hmm. those are not mutually exclusive ideas. And so let me give you one example. For me, I look at what Colin Kaepernick did last year and him wearing the pig socks at a practice, the cops wearing, mm-hmm. Or the pigs wearing police officer hats. And I hated it. My dad's 45 years on the Seattle Police Department, now retired. My sister, currently a detective on the Seattle Police Department. I hated that. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't allow me to just turn off everything else he's saying, right? I don't think what Colin Kaepernick, how he went about things, was a perfect method. But it'd also be wrong of me to say he has no base for what he's coming from. Mm-hmm. And so what I've seen over the weekend on TV and on Twitter to call these protests spoiled young millionaires who are disrespecting our country and our military members is to me just a convenient way to paint over their message with one single broad stroke. It's very much possible to love your country and acknowledge that it can be better. Again, not mutually exclusive ideas. So Steve Kerr wrote a fantastic piece for Sports Illustrated. Bob Costas has gone on CNN, also went on with Bill Maher over the weekend. I think he had some great points as well. I implore you to go check out what they had to say, but also go to the other side of the coin and seeing what's being said and just sit back and listen, right? This conversation can't be had over 140 characters. I think it's going to be difficult. Like you said, it's time for this necessary conversation to happen. It will be uncomfortable for many of us. Mm-hmm. Our opinions and thoughts will be challenged, but I think that's how we grow as a people. In this day and age, we put ourselves in this bubble. We have this ability to put ourselves in a bubble of who we follow on Twitter, who we interact with, and which content we choose to consume. So we feed our own ideas, right? Go read what Eric Reed wrote. Go turn on a news channel you might not normally watch. Get yourself the full picture and then make your decision, right? I think that's what I would implore people to do. It's time to have that conversation. I think with Trump's tweets over the weekend, he missed his opportunity to have that rational discourse. Hopefully in the future he'll act differently.
That's well said, Joe, and credit to your family for their service in law enforcement. As you said that, I'm thinking of Doug Baldwin, who has been so eloquent on this very subject over a year, whose own father was involved in law enforcement, and now he has chosen to take this conversation that started, and you said started in some unpleasant ways about police actions in law enforcement last year. And just the last thing I would say about your point is the rational discourse. We can't get trapped by one person who has chosen to take the political world and treat it like it's a wrestling manager, where it's nothing but shock value statements that have no intention other than to drive ratings, and that is the oxygen for this person. That cannot, it's already deflecting us too much. It can't deflect us from what we need, which you said, the rational, and what has happened over a year, which has been, I think, a most important conversation.
Perfectly said. Let's talk ball, and what a hell of a game on Thursday night. Unfortunately, the 49ers coming up just a bit short, but what was evolving into what could have been a legendary comeback for the 49ers. Let's go back to Levi's Stadium. Thursday night, the lone primetime game of the 49ers in 2017. We jump ahead into the first quarter. 49ers already down 7-0 after the early pick from Brian Hoyer. He takes it himself. And the first touchdown of the season for the 49ers, just Brian Hoyer's second career rushing touchdown. Then off play action, it's Garrett Celek getting into the end zone from 1 yard out. That made it a one-score game. The Rams would fight back again. Jared Goff good all game long. This is Sammy Watkins' second touchdown. Fights his way to the end zone from 13 yards out. But the 49ers would not go away quietly. Here's Trent Taylor's first career touchdown. It's a 3-yard touchdown catch. And the special team, such a story in this one, both the good and the bad. Here is some of the good. And this is Victor Bolden Jr. forcing a fumble, giving the 49ers another chance. Down just 8 points, a one-score game. Again, there's the replay, an incredible effort there. Special teams, such a huge part of this one. The Rams also lost a muff punt, and we'll get to the grand finale of it all here coming up. Again, 49ers get the ball back. Now on the 1 yard line, it's fourth and goal. Carlos Hyde scores his second touchdown of the game, and now a 2-point conversion away from tying this ball game. Mind you, the 49ers down to one timeout, so they have to get it. And they don't. Trent Taylor was the third option on that play. That game, that ball was intercepted. He was open going out, not open coming back in. The 49ers still down two. Up to the onside kick. Oh, and just a beauty from Robbie Gould. Dakota Watson knocks down the Rams player, waiting for it. The 49ers recover, and they have life once again. Here's another look. Ted, have you ever seen an onside kick as beautifully executed?
Yeah, this was perfect, and it's two people that did it. Robbie Gould hits the ball perfectly, but the play's made by Dakota Watson. That's his job. And he plasters that man who's trying to catch it. That's textbook.
And here's the play of the game in terms of a controversy standpoint. Trent Taylor called for offensive pass interference. You take a look. We don't have the All-22. We're going to come back to this and why maybe 49ers fans have some legitimate beef to be frustrated on this one. Instead of first and 10 in field goal range, it's third and 20. Now fourth and 20, and Aaron Donald does what Aaron Donald does. He gets a sack of Brian Hoyer. That effectively ends the game. 41-39, the 49ers comeback falls short. Now 0-3 on the season, the Rams 2-1. Ted, your initial impressions from this game?
Wow.
Look, wow is right.
Yeah,
Where do you begin?
Well, because there's so many stories. I mean, the start was horrendous. Brian Hoyer's very first play of the game was just, I'll tell you what, big picture, Tim Ryan and I talked about this afterwards. There was a lot of memories to us of the Packers playoff game at Candlestick, which was Colin Kaepernick's first playoff game. And remember what happened on the first drive of that game? Pick six, Sam Shields, Packers. And you're thinking now, rookie quarterback, he hadn't even played a full season, and he throws a pick six right up front in a playoff game. You think it's going to crumble him, and Kaepernick turned around and had one of the greatest single playoff games that an NFL quarterback's ever had. So now, Hoyer didn't go to that extreme, but after playing a very poor game in Seattle, he comes out and throws that pick six, in essence, on the first play of the game and the first quarter, and really into early second quarter, he wasn't very good. He had a Garcon on a deep throw down the 49ers sideline, wide open for what, a 40-yard play, and threw the ball into the bench. I mean, it was just, you're cringing, and you're thinking, man, this just can't happen. And then suddenly, Hoyer turned it around. And great credit to Brian Hoyer because he played a terrific second half. Credit to the offensive line. The five offensive linemen played every snap of that game. All five of them played all 82 snaps. Credit to them. They held up very well in the second half against a good Rams defensive front. Unfortunately, this was a game where I thought the defense may have shown the after effects of playing a physical game in Seattle where they played so well, having the short week, because the defense just didn't play right. It was not... they just couldn't stop the Rams. Navarro Bowman played so brilliantly in Seattle, he wasn't the same player on the field Thursday night. That was significant. So you flip all that in. And then the end of the story is that, Joe, I hate doing this. I really do, because it sounds terrible coming from an announcer. In 8 prior years on this job, I have thought there's been one game in 8 years that I saw that I thought felt was not NFL officiated. It was a game here a couple of years ago against Atlanta, by the way, against Shanahan. 3 games in a row to start the season have been that way. I hope the NFL is concerned, because it's just substandard officiating that is, and the Trent Taylor call, the people who measure these things, and it's gaining a little more credibility. The win probability for the 49ers on that one play, Taylor catches that ball, it's first and 10, is 59%. After it's erased and that flag, the win probability drops to 35% on that one call. And it's very rare that those who study this say that one call or one play, it happens, but rare. that one play changes the win probability that dramatically. That's what bad officiating can do.
Since you went there, let's jump ahead. I had a
I dove in head first, Joe.
I like it. And here's my beef, right? Is because the lack of consistency at the end of the game. And I want to call this play. This is second and goal. Garrett Celek gets absolutely molested in the back of the end zone. The guy's got his hands around both of his biceps and takes him down. Celek obviously frustrated. But at that point, you're saying, we're going to let the boys play. Okay, you're going to let the boys play. But don't tell me that that's not pass interference because he's draped all over him the entire time. Okay, so now third and 10, Trent Taylor, he's got the arm bar out there and he might extend it a little bit. But you've already set the precedent that you're going to let the boys play. He never extends the arm fully. He's got the arm bar there and creates separation. And so to me, it's the lack of consistency in critical moments. And you forget, the 49ers ended up scoring, so this play is forgotten about a little bit. But they had to use a timeout to get there before your third down play, or maybe it was the fourth down play. And then they used the timeout before the two-point try. And so all of a sudden, you're left with one timeout where you had to get the onside kick as opposed to kicking it away and potentially getting a defensive stop. And so that to me is my frustration. Like you said, with the win probability, you're at the 40-yard line, first and 10. You're 5 yards away, definitely a first down away from being in field goal range.
Right.
Robbie's been cooking in terms of, you know, his field goal attempts. He hasn't missed one yet. Obviously, the PAT try in the first half, or was it early in the second half, that was, you know, turned out to be costly. But that, to me, and those two calls right there, in fourth, we're not pulling first quarter, first drive of the game to your fourth quarter. I mean, this is back-to-back drives.
Those were game deciders. And there were other calls. I mean, there was a red zone holding call on Kyle Juszczyk in the first half that was totally phantom. I mean, the game was just not well officiated. I can't stand saying it.
Yep.
And as you said, the Kyle Juszczyk hold in the first half does not decide the game. Those calls down the stretch do have a disproportionate influence on how the game's decided. Something else that you referenced, though, Joe, that I think it's important, because I don't think fans, and I understand rule changes are very hard for everybody to keep up on, but something that influenced this game as well, there's a new rule this year in the NFL where you can celebrate now. The restrictions have been taken off a lot. You still can't do, you know, in essence, the throat slash gang stuff. You can't do anything that's sexually suggestive. Those are still going to get flagged. But you want to spin the ball. You want to do the Marquise Goodwin track hurdler thing. Those are fine now. The caveat is they're starting the 40-second play clock once the touchdown's acknowledged. The 40-second play clock starts, which implies to the conversion attempt, which is the NFL's kind of quiet way to say, okay, you can celebrate, but it ain't going to last 2 minutes. Otherwise, you're going to pay a price. The 49ers paid a price for that. Because clearly after the 41-39 touchdown, they had to go for two. Hopefully you're ready for that on the sideline, but it clearly took the 49ers a little bit to get together. They broke the huddle. Their alignment wasn't proper, and they were forced to take a timeout. Mm-hmm. And that's not one you have – when you're trailing, you don't want to have to use it. Now, clearly you needed to get the two-point play right. We get that. But in the ideal world, as a professional team, you're ready to go, you execute, and therefore if you fail, as the 49ers did on the two-point play, you still have that timeout to use to try to get the ball back.
Absolutely. And again, the 49ers had their opportunities. They still had two turnovers. Brian Hoyer didn't have to throw an interception on the first play of the game, right? So no one – is saying that the 49ers didn't have a chance to win. It's solely on the officials' fault, but still, that's their job. And just as Brian Hoyer is open for criticism, the officials should be as well, and I don't think they did their job to the best of their ability on Thursday night, plain and simple. Let's talk about 49ers receivers, because when we talk about the first two games and the passing game struggles, there were still a couple of drops in this game, but the huge drops in games one and two, somebody go make a play. We saw Pierre Garçon and Marquise Goodwin. Pierre Garçon in particular,
right.
7 catches, 142 yards. A couple of them highlight Real Sports Center top 10 catches. The one on the sideline that had to be challenged. Goodwin also had that toe-tapping catch on the sideline. A 59-yard bomb that Garçon lays out for. I mean, look at this body control.
That's a spectacular catch. That's just flat-out spectacular.
Especially you have to, you know, keep possession going all the way to the ground. All that. I mean, look at this. That is just going and making a play for your quarterback, giving your team a chance to win. Exceptionally done by those two guys. And I think that's something that was missing from the first two games. Yes, Brian Hoyer hasn't been perfect, but you know he hadn't gotten a lot of help from his receivers either. And look at that. I mean, that's a great throw. But a full extension grab by Pierre Garçon, I mean, he has been worth every penny so far. The yards after the catch, the contested catches, and again, giving the 49ers a chance to win, really just spectacular stuff from those two. And so that was one of my biggest takeaways, was guys really helping out Brian Hoyer for the first time this season.
Yeah, Joe, and something
Look
else.
Look at this effort. Look at that effort.
Something else we saw in the second half, and you're seeing it on a bunch of these plays, we touched on last week, is how much the 49ers have worked from day one of camp through on deep throws. And it didn't pay off in the first two games, and it really paid off in the second half Thursday night. You saw the work that they put into throwing the deep shots. Hoyer threw them well. The receivers connected. And it was nice to see Goodwin. I think you made a great point there, because Goodwin, we know what happened the first two games. For Goodwin to contribute the way he did was nice. Now the next one is, they have to, because we had two of these plays in the first half where receivers bobbled the ball up in the air. And you can't, it's just, no one's trying to do that, obviously. But those generally are interceptions.
Yep.
Fortunately for the 49ers, it was Breida on one and Robinson on another one. Both fell to the ground. But those are the ones that I would say 8 times out of 10, when you don't catch a ball and you pop it up in the air, that's going to get picked off.
We got a few questions coming in. Anthony wants to know an update on Reuben Foster. Just real briefly, Kyle Shanahan spoke on Friday, said, he's improving, obviously, not wearing the boot anymore, but he'd be shocked if he went against Arizona, so probably still likely out at least another week. Mm-hmm. Eric Reed behind him with that knee injury. Tank Carradine, the high ankle sprain, he's probably out 4 to 6 weeks as well. So the 49ers getting no reinforcements as of now on the defensive side of the football, and that goes to Obi's question. No sacks on Thursday. What's going on with the pass rush?
Yeah, and we can update. Tank Carradine's going to go on IR, so that okay. Now, that doesn't necessarily eliminate him for the season. You have the opportunity to bring two players back off IR, but it's going to be 8 weeks, and that would be, you know, significantly into the season now. But that's a smart play by the 49ers, because with the high ankle sprain, it's probably a six-week deal to make sure you have it right. So you just put him on IR, fill the roster spot. The unfortunate part is that Tank has finally found his role, it appears, right? He's finally, after a bunch of years trying to square peg round hole him, you finally found the right fit for him. And Joe, I thought it was fascinating to look at the amount of time guys played these first couple of games. And you look at this last game, Tank played twice as many snaps as Aaron Lynch. We know Elvis Dumervil is not going to play a ton of snaps, but I think Dumervil only played, was it 10 or 11 snaps yep. in the game Thursday night. Aaron Lynch didn't play much more than that. So it gives you an idea of where the 49ers think Tank Carradine fits and his importance. So now, I think it's fairly apparent you're going to need Solomon Thomas to play more to accelerate his first-year development. And then I think it's going to say, hey, Aaron Lynch, let's go. You know, be the guy that we know you can be. Be the guy we saw as a rookie, a disruptive force on that defensive front.
Rams, 8 of 12 on third down. You could very much argue that was where the game was won for Los Angeles. Took the 49ers from 10th overall to 28th overall in terms of points allowed. Scoring defense. So the pass rush certainly going to be something in emphasis going forward. And as we turn the page to Arizona, Mike wants to know what's the matchup you're watching as the 49ers head south in week four?
Huh, Arizona. Well, the first one that jumps to mind is Larry Fitzgerald, because, you know, that's a guy the 49ers in earlier years played very well against Fitz when he was the wideout, the explosive wideout. And you recall that, and 49er fans, faithful fans remember this, that in those years, the guys that really hurt the 49ers more than anybody was that they had a slot receiver named Steve Breston, if you remember that
yep.
name, and then Anquan Boldin. Once Versarians made the move, I think it's 2 years ago now, to move Fitz in the slot, he's by far played his best games against the 49ers. It's been astounding. They've really had trouble with him. Now, the good news from the 49ers standpoint, Jimmy Ward played a lot. We should mention that. Jimmy Ward played a lot Thursday night and held up. So that's good. It's pretty clear now that he's moved past the hamstring. That might be something that's essential. I don't know if Kaywan Williams gets that draw if Fitz is in the slot, or do you go with Jimmy Ward? Because we've seen that before with Jimmy. You know, it doesn't necessarily fit into Jimmy's role in this defense, but I'll be fascinated to watch to see how the 49ers prepare for that this week and what they do Sunday, because we just know the last couple of years it's been torture watching Fitz just run havoc with his incredible veteran savvy and skill out of that slot.
Yeah, a thorn in the 49ers side for sure. Mm-hmm. How about all the familiar faces? From Alex Boone to Phil Dawson to Mike Iupati to Andy Lee to Antoine Bethea. Did I get that? It's like a 49ers alumni meeting in Arizona. Some fun, familiar faces we're going to get to see this weekend.
Yeah, you know, I'm I guess I don't know why. I like kickers. I really admired Phil Dawson here. I thought Phil Dawson was a tremendous 49er. Obviously when he first came here, the team was, still in the process of being a Super Bowl contender. And over the last couple of years that Phil was here, that went away. So his value may have been less. And there's Bethea. We'll talk about him in a second. But Phil was a great ad for Arizona because that's a team that this year still thinks they have a shot. I don't know, with David Johnson's injury, I'm not so sure about that anymore. But and it allowed Phil to be closer because Phil's son is playing high school ball in Texas, and he wanted to be able to get home and watch his son play as many games as he can on Fridays. And being from Phoenix to there was a much easier trip for him, and I think Arians is allowing that to happen. So it all made sense for Phil at this point in his career. And we know how much Arizona has struggled missing kicks, right? So I think they're saying, hey, if we're going to take one more run at the big thing this year with a 38-year-old quarterback, and Fitz is, 34, 35 now, we bring in Phil Dawson to kick for us. We bring in Bethea to try to be a legend in that back end. Now, we saw Antoine, I thought last year he really struggled in coverage, but late in the year, and Kyle Shanahan actually referenced this to me in a conversation, late in the year when the 49ers played in Atlanta and then against the Rams, the game in the Coliseum, and the 49ers were so shredded with injury at linebacker, they moved Antoine up. Remember, he played linebacker, and he played well in that spot. And going forward, he could still play. If he had to run backwards and play that deep safety spot, that was not any longer something he was going to be strong at.
Yep. Ted, appreciate your time, man. Again, 49ers looking for their first win of the season. I think the key for me, put it all together. We saw the defense against Seattle. We saw the offense against Los Angeles. Now it's time to find that magic recipe and get it put together. We'll get a chance to see the Arizona Cardinals tonight on Monday Night Football. They host the Cowboys, which should be an entertaining one. The Seahawks lost yesterday. The division by no means decided. So while 0-3 isn't pretty, it's not like anyone, I don't think, is going to run away with it.
And the significance of last Thursday night's game, Joe, just think about this, the swing, those very thin margin that the game ends up being decided by. What you saw yesterday, Tennessee pounded Seattle. Nobody does that to Seattle's defense, what Tennessee did yesterday. So my point is, now the 49ers are frustrated. They just want to get a win. They want to get a validation stamp for Kyle and for John's new approach here. We know that. If you're the Rams, you're sitting at 2-1 now, and you believe because Seattle is clearly not going to run away with things. Arizona with Carson Palmer, 38, with David Johnson down for a substantial part of the season, et cetera. That's if suddenly the Rams have a shot to believe. Now, if the 49ers have been able to pull that game out Thursday night, the Rams at 1-2 may not have felt quite that way. But the Rams now at 2-1, I'll guarantee in Los Angeles, they're sitting there thinking, hey, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
The process continues here in San Francisco. Ted, appreciate all your thoughts and insights.
Thanks,
each week. I'm Joe Fan. Enjoy your week, everybody. We'll see you next Monday right here on 49ers Live.